I don't think throwing my name out on a poster, for example, or a picture where people can see as they're passing by, is going to attract anyone into the theater. Mm-hmm. I think, to me, the story is what's going to bring people in. I may be wrong, but my friends are going to know that I'm in the play because I'm personally mm-hmm. going to start, I'm going to let them know that. And I think every member of the cast, if you're involved in a show and you're not personally letting everybody know, that's a mistake too, because yes, that is where your biggest audience is coming from, is from people that we all know within our sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's going to bring in, you know, oh, David Warr's in that. I remember him as Daddy Warbox. I'm certainly going to go see him in the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. There's no business like show business.
And away we go.
Hello again, and welcome to the art and business of community theater presented by the Monroe Community Players and featuring us, the Green Room Groupies. Each episode, we discuss issues relevant to the operation of a successful theater, how to produce the highest quality shows for your audience, and sometimes we slip into other topics as well. You certainly understand how Green Room conversations go. I'm David Ward, the de facto leader of our little band, and looking around the Green Room today, I see yet another full house. Surprise, surprise.
Ron Roberts.
Dramatic pause. Love it.
Yeah, well, you know.
Kathleen McBee.
Tired.
Brian Burchett Ross. There's a glass there, Dave.
I'm tearing down the studio.
Carol Slifka.
And?
The despicable Robert Yeoman.
No.
So now we have to find new adjectives for Bob every time.
Every time.
I think it's an adjective, right? Mm-hmm. Welcome back to what we're calling part two of our special, very special episodes. Episode 66 here. Last episode, 65. Go listen to that if you haven't listened to it yet, so you can be brought up in the conversation. But we spent the last episode talking about why we love community theater. How do we tell the story of community theater? And today we're going to get more into the nuts and bolts of how do we market and tell the story of community theater in such a way that people will want to come in and see our shows. Not necessarily marketing for individual shows, which we've covered in the past, though I'm sure we'll touch on that, but more how do we better broadcast and talk about community theater as a group, or as a group, as a whole, as the community of community theater. And I'm just babbling at this point. So, and we will also have a review at the end of this episode of the Black Swamp Players production of The Moors that I had the opportunity to see recently.
You're doing a review?
I'm doing a review.
Whoa! Whoa.
Someone get a calendar and mark it.
We just need a good nickname for me. I'm thinking Dashing Dave.
Oh.
We can keep thinking. We can keep thinking.
Just go with that. Daring Dave.
Dapper Dave?
Dapper
keep
Dave.
Him away from Dastardly.
Ooh, I like Dave Dastardly. But anyway, so before we get into that, though, I need to give a mea culpa to myself. Is that how you do it? I need to say a mea culpa.
Sounds pretty dirty to me.
Basically, I have to give out a mea culpa. We're letting that slide, Bob. I'll give you a pass on that one. A couple episodes ago, we had a discussion about what plays do attract younger audiences. What do younger people want to see? And I think I may have, during that conversation, disrespected our younger audiences by saying, well, you know, it's going to be, and this may have been after the episode, I'm not sure, but it says it's going to be some big musical like Wicked or something that we can't do anyway because it's not available. Well, I was wrong. Oh. Carol took the initiative. Thank you. I've lost my words already. I got the words in front of me and I still lose them. Took the initiative and posted on her Facebook page, her personal one, said, hey, young folks. And I presume by young, we mean anybody under the age of 45.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Actually, we're hoping we aimed a little lower than that. She said, tell me a show that you'd like to see or be part of. And we were actually surprised. She may not have been. I was surprised by the results, how thoughtful they were. So, Carol, will you give us a quick update on that?
Sure. So there were a few suggestions, and I looked at all of them. So one was A Silent Sky. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a period piece. It's set in 1900. It's the true story of the astronomer Henrietta Leavitt. and the struggles that she faced being a woman in a scientific community and whatever. I was concerned that all of the astronomy elements and it being a period piece would be hard to stage in terms of costuming and backdrop and whatnot. And I was also thought, you know, 1900 wasn't really my thought that we would want something that would attract the younger people. Another one that was suggested, I think by two people, was Dog Sees God. And mm-hmm. the subtitle is Confessions of a Teenage Blockhead. I like the cast size. It's four female, four male. I read through the play. To me, it's very, very high school-y. There's lots of language, lots of sex talk, lots of swearing, lots of teen angst. It just seemed very gratuitous in many ways to me. And I thought, that's not something I'd be comfortable directing. So that one kind of went away for me. Another one was Circle Mirror Transformation. This is five actors, male, female, doesn't matter. And it is the story of these people who come together in an acting class. And they learn to open up and whatever. And I was concerned that would only appeal to a limited audience. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was that. Another one, 4,000 Miles. I love this concept. I couldn't find the script. I haven't read it. But I want to save it and maybe be a part of it. It's just two actors, one old lady, that would be me, and then one 20s male. And it's the story of this young man who tragically loses a good friend and moves in with his grandma.
Oh.
And learns kind of about life through her, and they talk about loss and about moving on and whatever. So that one is a good suggestion, but it's something I'm looking at a little closer, I think, later on. But the one that I think I'm going to go with, and I haven't read through it all the way yet, I'm about halfway through it, it's called Never Not Once. And it is the story of a young woman in her 20s who I think she's like 19. She's in college. She comes home for the weekend to her parents, who are two women, so a lesbian couple, interracial couple, and she wants to know who her father is. Mm. And so it's that type of exploration about why do you want to do that? How will this change things? Her parents' reaction to it. It's really interesting, and what I really like about it, two things really made it stick out to me was when I was searching for the script or for information on it, I saw that Purple Rose did it several years ago, and the author, I couldn't find a script anywhere, so the author had a page, so I went on his page, and I said, you know, I'm having trouble, where would I find a, and he emailed me back personally and sent me a copy of the script.
Oh, wow.
So there we go. Mm. And so I asked him about, performance fees and stuff. And he said, if we decide to go forward with it, let him know and he'll put us in touch with his agent. So
Wow. Nice.
So, yeah. So I like that kind of personal touch. And so far, like I say, I'm really interested in the concept. And I think it's something that a wide audience it would appeal to, and that it has five actors, three women, two men, and the ages, you know, would be variable. But again, it would be skewed more towards the younger, mm-hmm. like, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but under 50 crowd. Them youngsters. I think it would be really fun to direct. Mm. I think it would be a really interesting, and staging looks like it would be pretty easy. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, their apartment, there's nothing outlandish about it or anything. It's contemporary, so I don't have to worry about costuming, not a lot of props. So that the trick would be getting just the right actors for it, as with anything.
So now, contrary to my belief,
yeah.
When we made the comments, none of these are musicals, correct?
None of them are musicals, but I did also in my post, I said, no musicals, please.
Oh.
So we'll have to try one without musicals. But they came up with, you know, her friends came up with, I thought, very interesting plays I hadn't heard of.
Yeah.
So what a wonderful way just to get that kind of feedback that we normally don't get. Yes, Brian.
Now, I have a couple questions on it. Well, I have another question, too. First of all, I'd like to read that high school one. I'm curious about that one. But this one that you're interested in, is it a two questions? Mm-hmm. Is it a comedy or a drama or a little bit of both? And the second question is, you said the couple are interracial.
Yeah.
Does that play a part that would that deter if you couldn't find someone to play that interracial couple?
It is a drama. I have not found anything in the script yet that, because I've been reading with that in mind. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, I'm not all the way through it. So, you know, something may come up, but and I'm not even sure it would have to be, the parents would have to be both women. It could be both men, but it has to be a gay couple. The show doesn't work.
Absolutely.
So it's,
Does the playwright though specifically say this is who they are in terms of both being female, both being interracial?
Yes.
Yeah, so that could present problems when asking for the rights.
Right.
We might have to ask, can we change the
opening ethnic identity line of communication? That's something we can ask those kind of questions directly to from the author.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I say, I'm trying to get all the way through the script first.
Understood.
Without a 55-pound dog sitting on me while I'm trying to read. It's always tricky.
Your husband does that too?
Yes. He's lost weight. No. No, our dog who thinks she's a lap dog.
They're always puppies.
Oh my God.
Always.
And with this cold weather. Anyway, I digress. So once I get all the way through the script, I'll have a better sense of you know, how we can play with that. And I absolutely would ask the author if that was the thing. But it's won some awards and cool. So I'm kind of excited about it.
Cool.
Yep.
No, so thank you. It's interesting, like I say, it's not a scientific experiment by any means. But once again, it does show the power of social media to get out there and find people that we haven't before. And did put a limitation on it. However, you know, bravo to the folks who responded.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it's like they came up with some good stuff.
Yeah.
The dog sees God, for those who are not familiar with that play, it is loosely based, it's a parody, frankly, of the Peanuts characters.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the dog in this case would be a version of Snoopy. But it's a parody. It's been done before. They obviously got by the Charles Schulz estate.
Which is a miracle.
I think it was actually done before he died.
Was it?
I think the show's been around for a little while now.
Yeah. I picked that up when I was reading it.
Is that the high school one with the swearing and all that?
Yeah.
Well, she's saying high school in the sense of how it was written.
Yes.
Right.
It's not appropriate for a high school.
No,
to do.
Not at all.
No, I didn't.
But with the subtitle of Teenage Blockhead, I thought that's where
Confessions
I figured
of a Teenage Blockhead.
I
haven't read it. So that's to me, that was interesting that they came up with dramas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, not so much comedies, one being a historical piece as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we're looking at, you know, what do young people want, let's not, you know, don't be like me, don't take anything for granted. You know, but if you don't reach out with some different pieces than what you're probably used to doing, especially if your board tends to skew a little towards the older demographic, you're going to get the same people you've always gotten. You want new people, you got to reach out to with different stuff.
Right. Well,
one thing I would say, and I know that we tend to think younger people like musicals, and they do. But I also think that as they mature out of that high school stage, they get into the college age and they become more familiar with life and realize that the world is not a musical.
Yes.
It is more of a drama and comedy. And I think that that's where now they see their experiences and they want to be able to relate to that on stage. So, yeah, I mean, that was the point I was going
to
make.
Yeah, and I agree with you, but I will have to say one of the, as I mentioned in the last episode, it'll be 40 years now that I've walked through the doors of Monroe Community Players, and I do remember a certain young man who had a lot more hair at that point, who said, and I remember this during the cast party, I remember him saying to all of us sitting at that table, life should be a musical. We should all break out in song and dance whenever we want to. Yeah, right, Dave?
Yes.
Oh!
Yes, yeah. So, and I agree. Yeah, that was
I
you.
I thought it was you.
No, it was you. It was you.
It was either of you.
I did have a lot more hair then.
Dave.
Well, I had a lot more hair in my head.
Dave said, wouldn't life just be more wonderful if we could just suddenly just, we all break into a dance and a song in the middle of song. And I thought,
and
God, life would be.
And then Buffy the Vampire did it.
Is there a law that says you can't do that?
No.
Okay.
But it's just more satisfying when the band strikes up at the same time.
That's true. And it's more satisfying when there are six other people who do it along with you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, solo performances or, you know, I've been known to, with the four-year-old and I, tend to, you know,
though, I think what Brian just said is be careful what you say. Because it may come back 40 years later to haunt you. It was to the point where you don't even recognize it.
Wishes come true, not free.
But also, Dave, that was 40 years ago for you. And then to Ron's point, we just talked about, you know, people's taste maturing, you know? So.
Well, I still think life would be better if we could all break into song.
I do too.
I don't know. I've heard some of us singing.
Oh, yeah.
It's about the joy of singing. It's not necessarily whether you have a good voice or not. It's the joy that you bring into yourself and others, Bob.
Yeah, does not have joy, it's not worth living, right?
I meant joy. Sometimes, no.
Happiness is a full box of cereal.
Well, here we go.
Here we go.
Hey, you Fruit Loops.
Love the smell of Fruit Loops in the morning, right? So thank you, Carol, for doing that.
Thank you.
So what I'm going to encourage everyone to do, and not just those of us sitting in this room, but those of you listening as well, you all have Facebook, you know it. It's get out there and just say, hey, folks, if you're under, and do what Carol did, said, looking for younger impressions, what plays would you get involved in? What plays do you want to see? And you might be surprised by the answers. And that, frankly, might help you a little better as we can moving now into our discussion, part two of our very special episodes, the how do we market and how do we tell the story of community theater? Mm-hmm. Prior to this episode, I did send out to the group a blog I had found from the Wakeman Consulting Group, who I have not looked up to see what they do, but I think they do something with selling tickets. because the gentleman who wrote this did say, you know, get talking tickets, his newsletter. But it was done back in 2017. Let me see if I can, I don't see their website here, which I should see. This is by Dave Wakeman at the Wakeman Group. But he did a thing on the top 10 problems, 10 big challenges facing performing arts as an industry. Mm-hmm. And community theater, whether you like it or not, think about it or not, we are part of the performing arts industry, or communities we go. And one of the things they talked about was finding a better way to talk about the value of the arts. Last episode, that's what we tried to do, was talk about the value of community theater. Mm-hmm. How do we describe community theater? How do we get that message across? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things he talks about is, hey, how do we got to find better ways to do this, which I think is what we're trying to figure out here as well. We won't get it figured out in this episode, but that's one of, I think, the missions of this podcast is, how do we get the story out? Let's get the story out. And then, of course, to some degree, marketing being a real issue as well. If we can't tell the story of community theater, how are we going to tell the story of any individual show? If we approach it just like all we have to do is tell people it's there and they will come, I think what he's saying, I think what we should be realizing is that's not enough. Mm. You know, we can say, hey, we're doing this show, come see it. It's not going to attract a single person to the show. It's my belief that we have to give them some reason why that show is relevant to their life.
I was going to say,
We need to touch on the why. Mm-hmm.
And also the timing of things to give yourself enough advanced promotion. So anything you do closer to the production date is actually significant information.
Yes. Well, and frankly, so what one of the things community theater or our group does, Monroe Community Players, is we do a weekly e-news. As soon as we know a show and as soon as we've paid for the rights, that's very important, as soon as we paid for the rights, it goes on the bottom of that newsletter. It's like coming soon. It may not be on the top of the newsletter, but it's down there. So it's I happen to do the weekly news. So basically, as the show date approaches, it moves up in that ranking. But we start getting the word out. Here's what's coming. A lot of you do that with your seasons. You actually announce a full season and say, here are the six shows we're doing this year. Now, some of that's because many of you are still doing season tickets. Good for you. Mm-hmm. Glad you made it work. Wish we could have. But that's one of the things I think that helps sell a season is you've got the right mix of shows, you get people to go to it. You don't know what's going to be the right mix of show for each individual, though. So it's like, how do you get the individual's attention? And I think first, we in community theater have that extra layer. It's easy for Broadway to say, hey, we're good. Mm-hmm. Come see our shows. Mm-hmm. It's not that easy for community theater, who, frankly, is probably struggling right now. This article was written in 2017. Things have not gotten easier since then.
Oh, no. Mm.
If anything, life and society have doubled down on us since COVID.
COVID, yeah.
And it's hard to get people back out of their houses, especially now that, even as we sit here talking, COVID's raising its head again, along with a host of other new diseases that either have been renamed or just identified because I'm getting shots for stuff I'd never heard of before.
Yeah.
And I don't want to hear from the folks who don't believe in that. I get you, but I do. So mm-hmm. I get my shots. Mm-hmm. If it's good enough for my dog, it's good enough for me. they get shots too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rabies and all that. So.
Heartworm.
No. To prevent putting them down.
I know.
Okay.
All right. One thing, you make fun of dogs on there.
I would say I would never dream of putting down Sandy from Annie because, I have great fondness for that dog.
Oh,
having played Daddy Warbucks.
So that being the toe.
You know, I stay up nights figuring out how I'm going to get that in.
That was smooth.
I bet you do.
That was smooth.
Wasn't that smooth? Just sure. So
he thinks about it and thinks about it, and then he laughs and he cries, and it's better than cats.
There we go. So there we are. So challenges. We can talk a little bit about marketing here, but how do we better tell the story? I think one of the ways is, as Carol just did, social media. Mm-hmm. Get out there. Now, I have some opinions on social media, what works, it doesn't work. I don't know if they're true or not, because these are things I see everyone doing, but I think I'm not sure if they're really that effective. So, for example, people always post it on Facebook. Great. Our audiences do tend to be older. Facebook is where these so-called old folks are, which isn't what Mark Zuckerberg had envisioned, but now he's moving closer to that older age too, so I guess he gets what he wants.
If he had a decent toupee.
Yeah. So the 55 and older crowd, they're seeing our message. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are doing Instagram, which happens to be owned by the same company that owns Facebook. What I'm seeing, though, is they're doing things not necessarily they're trying to sell the show, but in my opinion, and I think someone at this table may have a different opinion, Kathleen, what they do is promote the people in the show and not necessarily the show itself or why you should want to see the show. Mm-hmm. So I will see on any number of Facebook and Instagram posts, here we got this show coming up, we're doing, Actor's Nightmare, because I'm tired of referring to The Odd Couple. And in this part, we've got so-and-so playing this role. And then the next picture is, here's so-and-so playing this role. Meet the director, meet the cast, things like that. I'm of the opinion that that will sell tickets to that person's friend if they happen to be on the same, you're following your Instagram page. But I don't know if that really sells a show. Mm. To me, you need to be saying, once again, we are presenting something that's relevant to your life, and here's why.
Well, and here's the thing, too. There's a difference between just posting something on Facebook and creating an event for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important to create an event, because there's been many times when I've just gone in and said, okay, what's going on near me tonight? And all kinds of stuff pops up. So if we have an event...
Yep.
Then that will show up as opposed to just a Facebook post. Okay.
Which reminds me, I thought I created the Becky's event. If I haven't, I will make sure that's done tonight.
What's that about, Dave?
That's the next show that we are doing that probably will drop that show will drop before the show drops. Actually, no, the show will.
This should be dropping right around
the time of the show. But anyway.
Yeah.
Becky's new car, come see it.
So, like you say, that is good for older audiences. Mm-hmm. Younger ones, not so much on Facebook. And I don't know if there is another social media site that might be more, that the younger ones might be, besides Instagram and TikTok and whatnot. If there's something new I haven't heard of.
I think the main one they're looking at now is TikTok. But the problem is, I think, to me at least, the format of TikTok does not lend itself well to advertising events.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't know if there's, you know.
Apparently it's good for selling soap.
I don't know. So that would be something to look into.
One of the things I was just thinking, we used to advertise to the churches through the church's newsletter. Maybe to have a dialogue with them, put at least one of our links to our production on their webpage, and vice versa, if they have events going on. They have some kind of a wider base with the churches. So nothing is going to be too outrageous for them.
Right, and I'm going to playing off church theme here, devil's advocate this episode. So here's the issue that might be a problem with that is the churches, of course, are declining.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I think you're going to get the same audience that you're going to get from your other places because old people go to church now.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see a lot of young people at churches. I know some of the churches out there have some young people, but they may not be the people that are interested in coming to our theater. I don't know.
But I'm saying they're interested not to come see the theater, but it would be to see their little darling grandchild.
See, but that's what I'm saying is I think that we shouldn't be promoting things based on
who's
in the show.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be promoting what the show is and why it's important to you.
Well, I think it should be both because it's free no matter what you do. One paragraph is about the show. The next one is your darling granddaughter will be one of the orphans or something like that. Hey, just to let you know so you can spread the word among your family.
Yeah, see, and I disagree.
It's funny.
I mean, the family's going to find out about it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very true. But it's funny that you brought this up. And before we started this episode, Ron, who's my assistant director or co-director, as well as being in the show for Becky's new car, asked me if we're going to do a video because I've done videos for other shows. And most of the time when I've done these videos, it's been stick the person in front of the camera. Hi, I'm playing Mortimer Brewster. Come see, da-da-da-da. Hi, I'm playing Elaine, da-da-da. And I've done that. Now, when we did last year, when we did Bench in the Sun, we kind of did a little bit of both, but we did it in character a bit, you know, be kind of. But to what you're saying, in my head, I had already planned that if we do a video, it's going to be the characters, and it's going to be, in my head, I see Becky standing next to a vehicle asking the audience, have you ever just wanted to drive? Have you ever? And, you know, and every clip I'm going to do is going to be about the show, trying to entice them. What's this about? I got to go see this sort of thing. I don't want that in this video. And so to your point, yeah, I think you're right.
Right. And I think that's what you're doing. You're selling. Here's how we're speaking to our audience with this show. Have you ever wanted to drive away? Have you ever just felt you should get in your car and go?
Mm-hmm.
Meet Becky Foster. She feels like you do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Come find her solution.
Yep. So, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And that may be a little harder than if we're doing one of the old favorites like Arsenic and Old Lace. It may not be, have you ever wanted to kill somebody?
Have you ever felt like poisoning old men?
Oh, my gosh.
Really?
But again,
interested in winemaking.
But I think that's how, to me, that's the point of some of these things we're looking at, and the point of our discussion is how do we tell the story?
Mm-hmm.
This is how this play is relevant to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But sometimes that personal connection is through the people that you know in the show. And sometimes you, through the marketing, you might see somebody. I think having a little bit of background on the person or their experience is a good thing. I listen to a lot of the Canadian Broadcast Network.
CBC,
thank you. And the reason I love that channel so much is because they always have, not always, but a lot of times they have a little backstory about the song, about the artist, what was going on at that time. And that always will draw me into, like, you know, I want to listen to the rest of that album, or I want to hear more about, and I'll Google that person and try and get more information. Those kind of, that story behind the person is always very intriguing to me. And I think that would be for the kind of people that like to go see theater, to make more of that connection.
Okay. I'm trying to think of, you know, to me, it's like, I think people like that. They like to hear that afterwards. It's certainly something that works with known celebrities because of whatever stardom is these days. I question whether anyone's coming outside my, frankly, my immediate family doesn't even show up anymore. But outside
well, after
my
episode 62, who can blame them?
Yeah. That's about right. But without, you know, I don't think throwing my name out on a poster, for example, or a picture where people can see as they're passing by, is going to attract anyone into the theater.
Mm.
I think, to me, the story is what's going to bring people in. I may be wrong, but my friends are going to know that I'm in the play because I'm personally going to start, I'm going to let them know that. And I think every member of the cast, if you're involved in a show and you're not personally letting everybody know, that's a mistake too, because yes, that is where your biggest audience is coming from, is from people that we all know within our sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's going to bring in, you know, oh, David Warr's in that. I remember him as Daddy Warbox. I'm certainly going to go see him in the show.
With the bald cap.
Yeah. You know, I just don't know if that, I just don't know if that works at the community theater level, whereas people are going to say, oh, Harrison Ford, I'll go see what he's up to and if he's using a cane or a walker yet. That's Indiana Jones. But he's very old, Brian.
I don't care.
Get off my plane.
He's off my lawn.
He's still dashing, but, you know, I think he's 80?
A lot of computer work went into Harrison Ford in the last 3 years.
And I'm an old man saying he's very old. That tells you how old he is.
All right.
But anyway, so that's, to me, where the difference is.
But where's the hook then? I mean, how do you get somebody to stop, grab their attention, and read it? And normally what I see, or when I'm scrolling through, it's the picture that catches my attention first. So you've got to have some kind of picture that connects to start the conversation.
Well, and
it would have to be an idealized picture of who they want to be. Let's say Joe is walking down the mall highway, Well, he's walking somewhere by the movie theaters and looks up and sees Ryan Reynolds with his shirt off and abs.
Ooh.
You got it. I'm not saying that everybody has to, but first is the visual component. Mm. The name, and the second thing, first thing should be a face picture. Mm-hmm. If you've got enough space for a full body, go for it. And then the title of the show, the movie, and then down all the production credits in the teeny tiny itty bitty teeny dee.
I see Carol shaking her head outside the corner of my eye.
But before I give her the mic, I'd just like to ask, okay, so is it going to be Ron or Dave that we're taking a picture with the shirt off?
No, Ryan Reynolds. Becky. We'll just say he couldn't make it.
Oh, okay.
Understudy. No, I agree with you, Dave, in that for community theater, I don't think anybody cares who's in it. I mean, other than somebody I'm related to. I will never go to a community theater show because of a person who's in it, because it's community theater. It's not, like you say, it's not Ryan Reynolds. It's nobody famous. It's nobody I can Google. It's about the story. Mm. It isn't about the actors in the story. So I think emphasizing the story more than the participants is what's going to bring people in, like you said. You know, did you ever want to just drive away from your life? That's something the person who is new to coming to community theater is going to be more interested in, rather than, here's Kathleen McBee. what wouldn't you like to know more about her? No, not. I mean, no offense. You know,
okay, Carol,
you know what I mean.
I gave you Ryan.
It's like,
I'm gonna let that one slide.
It's like if I see that, you know, the Downriver Theater Group is putting on a show, I want to know about the show. I don't care about the actors because they're community theater people. I don't mean this to sound denigrating at all, but I think you know what I mean. It's a different, we have a different audience. We have to have a different hook. We don't have Ryan Reynolds in the show, sadly.
Well, my point was the visual, a picture to first hook, to look again, and then they had to break the make the second contact. Let me see the sheet with the information on it.
Well, agreed, but it would be like a picture of the car as opposed to the picture of an actor.
But the car is the main focus.
Right. So it's about the story.
It could be a picture of the actor driving the car, of course.
Oh, Brian's going to pee his pants here.
What?
Oh, I really am. But
he's quite excited.
No, actually, I'm excited because I just thought of an idea for a picture, but we don't need to talk about Becky at this point. But I do want to play devil's advocate just a little bit with what you just said, Carol. And I'm not saying that you're wrong or that Dave's wrong, because I you're right. You know, for the most part, the people that are going, they're coming to see a particular person are friends and family. And occasionally, people that maybe have said... But at the same time, playing devil's advocate, there have been shows that I have seen from community theater groups of people that I know that I have honestly went, if that person's in it, I really have no interest in going to see that. So I mean, you know, that's and I hate to say it. Well, I don't hate to say it because it's just true. But there have been times when I've looked at shows and seen a certain person and went, yeah, you know what? I'm going to have to. I'd be interested in the show, but I just don't want to watch that person.
Matthew Broderick.
But that's because you're a community theater person.
Well,
you go to a lot of shows already. You're not the type of person that we have to convince to come into the show.
Well, that's
and that's my point, too. It's like, okay, now how do we... It's not just getting them to the show. It's how do we get them to the community theater?
Right. Yeah. And that's it. Like I say, I think it's more about the story than about the people. And on the same note as that, I would be, as a former teacher, a retired teacher, I'd be concerned that if I was in a show and the emphasis was on me, that former students would go, oh, I'm not spending $20 to go see her, or whatever. I think the emphasis should be on the story. Why is this story relevant to me? Why am I going to enjoy this story?
Sure.
Why am I going to spend my time and money hearing this story? What's in it for me? Yeah. As opposed to the actor.
But at the same time, having been a teacher for as long as you have, if you were to run across the show and you found out that the lead was someone that you did teach, you had taught, someone that maybe you really thought was special and you like... Wouldn't that make a difference on whether you'd want to go see it or not?
Maybe, maybe not.
Okay.
And I'm going to say something too, that the
I'm just throwing
because I always say I shouldn't announce that I'm going to say something. I should just say it, right?
No, announce it.
There are theaters out there that are community theaters that people don't even realize are community theaters.
Oh, yeah.
So, for example, I don't think people identify Croswell as a community theater, but it is by our definition of community theater. Last I was in a show, at least, they weren't getting paid. Some of the directors do, some other staff do, but the actors aren't getting paid. That makes it community theater. They're a nonprofit corporation. Same with, I'd say, some of our friends over in Grand Rapids Civic. It says Civic right in their name, Kalamazoo Civic, but I don't think they get identified as community theaters, whereas a group like Monroe Community Players is very much identified as a community theater.
I lived in Grand Rapids for 3 years, and there's a small little bar right next to the theater, the Grand Rapids Theater. And I had no idea that that was a community theater, and I lived there like 2-3 years. And they had cast parties there when I was there. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then finally found out, no, this is the theater. It's right around the corner. No, I mean the big theater. That is the big theater.
Well, I get your point, Carol, because when I went to see A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, it was the synopsis of the story.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
That made me want to go see it. I didn't know any of the actors. I only knew that synopsis and said, wow, that sounds really interesting.
Yep. And we do that when David and I go to New York on our trips. When we're looking at what Broadway shows to see, it's, yeah, well, I have to have a caveat on that because, yes, there are times when it's like, oh, look, Lawrence Fishburne's on Broadway. Let's check it out. Right. And we don't care. But for the most part, if there's not one of those moments where it's a celebrity we'd want to see, yeah, we're looking at what the show is. And I'll be honest, and Juliet, which is Carol gave us the rundown of, not, I completely skipped many times because when I read the synopsis of that, it was a jukebox musical and I wasn't interested in, I want to hear new music first, mm-hmm. even, you know, and I do have jukebox that I like, Moulin Rouge, and then there's the other one, but sometimes even maybe the synopsis, like Anne Juliet, maybe it doesn't give enough because after she told us about it, I was very more interested in it that I had no interest. And like I said, we could have gone and seen that for the last 2 years on Broadway and that's a jukebox. And, you know, it doesn't sound like something I would be interested in. But after her, you know, I was. So I don't know what I'm to say.
Right. Well, and I think so the synopsis is one thing Bob had talked about, you know, pictures or whatever. I agree personally that graphics are a big part of it. And especially, frankly, if we're trying to attract the younger audience, I ran into the experience where we were doing auditions. I had put the graphic onto the events page and everything. I didn't put the dates and stuff onto the graphic. Well, the people who were interested in auditions stopped at the graphic and didn't read the details. If you don't put it in the graphics, sometimes they don't see it. They aren't going for it, at least when posting it online, because they're scrolling through. You know, that's how you do it online now. You don't stop and read things on your phone. You just kind of scroll by them. We've had discussions, though, for things like banners and posters. How much do you really put in? For example, for Steel Magnolias coming up, our discussion has more or less been that the name of the show, you know, but the name of the show should be enough to carry it. We don't have to say anything about Steel Magnolias because everybody knows the show, presumably. And so we can go with a very simple poster, whereas the Becky's New Car, we needed a tagline, we needed a picture of the car, you know, and try to drag them in with some other ways.
Well, I think there's two audiences here that we're talking about. One are theater goers mm-hmm. that are looking for what they want to see next. Me in particular, I'm looking at what's going on in the area, what's, you know, works with my dates mm-hmm. and, you know, what would I like to see. And then we're talking about trying to reach people that may not necessarily go to the theater.
Right. Yeah, we don't have to convince you about mm-hmm. the power of community mm-hmm. theater. You've seen it, you experienced it, you love it, you're going. But yeah, right. How do we get that new person?
Yes, how do we get somebody to get interested in something that maybe's not been? How many times when we've done a show and Dave, you've gone out there and done the announcements and said, how many times you've asked, is this your first time here? How many people, is this your first time? And we get a pretty...
above at least 50%.
Yeah. I mean, that's super exciting. That, and then some of those people become repeat people because they know then your reputation starts carrying you that you are putting on a quality show.
Yeah. Yeah. And oh, who was it? Bob?
Me?
Yeah.
You were raising your
hand. Yeah. It might be slightly... It is slightly off topic, but... how much should the director and the producer be in charge of the graphics and the information?
Not at all, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brian, you seem to react.
I certainly don't mind. In our group, with the directors and the producers usually have a final say over it. But if you're really talking about pure marketing, it's really not up to the director and the producers. Maybe the producer agreed, but the director's job is put on the good show. Mm-hmm. It's someone else's job to make sure that the word is out about it.
So I think that's one step that we've been missing is who's actually responsible for it.
Feel free to disagree, Brian. I love that.
Depends on what they need taken off their plate is one way of doing it.
I think... Mr. El DeFacto.
And devil's advocate this episode.
Yes.
Devil here.
We know, Bob. I understand what you're saying. And in a perfect world, yes. And when you're talking about a small group like ours, the lines blur quite a bit.
Yes.
But I do think that, and yes, the director's job, it is all about just putting on the best show possible. But I do think that a director should at least be approached by whoever's doing graphics and saying, hey, is there anything about this show that is unique that we could put into the graphic?
Yes.
That, so, you know, that's the sort of, that's what I'm saying.
I see that.
That's what I mean.
That's his input, but not as final.
Oh, no, I don't think a director should have final say on that. But I think, you should approach the director and say, listen, is there anything you can give me that might help enhance this?
Before they go doing a lot of work, they all of a sudden go, oh, no, I needed the flowers and a steel bolt. And that steel magnolia is good enough.
And certainly, like I said, lines are blurring. For example, the graphic for Steel Magnolias went out to key board members, of which one of them happens to be the president sitting here next to me, but he also happens to be the director in this case. I think that helps blur that line.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, you know, in a lot of groups, those graphics are done months before rehearsal before a show is even cast.
It should be done a year before.
Yeah. So you know, how much input really are you really getting from the director at this point to say here's what the show is about?
Sure.
In some cases, there are groups announcing shows before they even have directors, which is probably another topic.
Yeah.
Because you know things can go real wrong there. So that's just something to keep in mind, especially if you're looking at a season. From the marketing standpoint, where they may, I can't remember, I think it was, I got to look at this here. It's actually kind of a shout out to Oregon Community Theater in Ohio. I just saw their ad for the 23-24 season. It was Discover Love on the East Side. So they had done their graphics following an overarching theme of love for their season. So you know, if you're doing something like that, the graphics may be dictated by depending how developed your marketing people are. So just a thought. In some cases, they don't blend at all.
Well, I know of one time there was a couple very loud arguments between the person who did the graphic and the person who is producing.
Mm-hmm.
Had done with Microsoft Word for the poster, which should not have happened.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, too. And so depending on how your group does it, you know, I think that's a decision you got to make there, too, at that level. Does the producer have full control of things like graphics, or is that something that's delegated to someone else on the board or through a different thing? If you're in a group that you're hiring, frankly, graphic artists, the producer probably doesn't have a lot of say except to say, well, I don't think that's really what this show is about and things like that. But to me, that's the input is here's what the show is about. And then you let the graphic artists do what graphic artists do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that scales up and down differently depending on the size of your group and the expertise you may have available.
Well, I think one thing, too, that we haven't talked about is when we look at a show budget, we need to include something for promotion. I mean, we look at that, we want to cover the rights, we need to cover our overhead. And I think sometimes we try and do things as cheaply as possible. But at the same time, with a little extra money, if that put 20 extra butts in the seats and 20 more exposures, you could just get it back. I mean, even if you just break even on it, if you've exposed more people, brought in somebody new, that could, in a sense, pay for itself. And I'm just going to use the analogy that my husband has used in his business for the longest time. It says, a man who stops advertising to save money is as smart as a man who stops his clock to try and save time. Mm. It doesn't work.
And as much as I love that, I think it strays a little from the how do we tell the story of community theater in our marketing as well at the same time. But I think that's very true.
Well, I think some of our marketing...
You need to promote.
It's going to cost money. I mean, we're looking at all these free avenues, and that's great. But if it's not going to be the person that pulls them in, if they're not going to stop and read the story, if they're not looking for a show to go to, how do you reach that outer rim of new people to come to your shows.
Well, which is our challenge, I think. And part of our challenge, too, is, frankly, we have been around for 75-plus years now. We have people who have been around our group for the majority of those 75 years, myself included. We know one way to do it. The world has changed in the past, you know, especially how you advertise as well. We need to look at, try to figure out a way to come up with fact-based or data-driven advertising. There are people out there that will, I'm going to get in trouble for this one, people out there who are stand fully behind flyers. I'm not against flyers per se, but I'm telling you right now that if you're posting up flyers and the only flyers you're posting up happen to be around your theater, you're not reaching anybody new.
Well, here,
you need to find effective places to put those flyers.
Yes.
And that's where I am against flyers, because I know historically that when we've done flyers, most of them end up in the back seats of people's cars and never get put up.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get that now? But I think now we've also got on top of it, I think we have to sell the theater group as much as we have to sell the show.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's less tangible. Because, again, I think ultimately the only way we sell our theater group is by the quality of the production that we do.
Mm.
Even if they're sitting on a seat that's not the most comfortable in the world, even if they're seeing sets that aren't the most luxurious, they will recognize the quality behind the acting and the directing. And that's where, in my opinion, is probably the biggest way, because that word of mouth is still very critical to us, and we need the audience to be, I think, what Tom Peters would have called, we need raving, or maybe Ken Blanchard, one of those gurus from the business world. We need raving fanatics. We need raving fans. And if we don't create them out of their audience, we're never going to, you know, we're going to always depend on, hey, we got to put Baby June into this show because we know Grandma and her aunts and her uncles will all show up. To me, and I'm on a diatribe, I guess. If you're just thinking about flyers and posters and ads in the newspaper, I think you're still thinking too small.
Mm.
You know, I'm not saying those can't be part of your overall marketing package, and certainly trying something new is great. But I think it's increasingly difficult to reach people, and to, like, say, to get these twin messages out. You need to see the show. Mm. If you go back to one of our favorite Christmas shows, movies, Scrooged, you know, how do they advertise Christmas Carol on that one? It was like, you must see this show. Your life depends on it.
Yes.
You know, in this world of hate, you must see the show. I think that's almost what we have to do. It's like, you have to see this show or you will die.
So now that more and more news,
you'll die anyway, but
now that more and more newspapers are online,
yep, is it the same?
I was going to say, do you even see the ads if you're reading the newspaper online?
It depends which version you're reading.
Okay. Because I think when we do get an article in the paper,
that's a big one.
It tells the story. And we see a response when that comes out. That can come online or it can come the hard copy, but
that's not an ad.
Right.
So,
but it is.
It is advertising, I understand. But when we have people that still think we should pay for an ad space in the newspaper, you do not see that online unless you click on the e-newspaper link. Mm-hmm. So then, I'm physically changing the pages on my screen, which totally defeats the entire purpose of the e-paper. So mm-hmm. I think that, to Kathleen's point, if we're looking at, you know, getting press releases and getting articles written about the group and the show, that's a strategy. But the idea of writing a check to the newspaper, say, here, I want a 4x6 and it's $300.
We actually have a recent show that I can point to in terms of watching what happened in terms of ticket sales, because for Anti-Heroes, which was a sold out show, by the way, new play, worked out great, but the playwright in that case had donated some actual ads in the paper. I knew when those ads hit, and I watched to see if ticket sales changed, and they did not change appreciably after the ads in the paper went in. You know, most of the ticket sales came after we sent out our e-news, and frankly, after every time somebody, from what I could tell, from when somebody posted it on our Facebook page. That's what sold the tickets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't see that bump. We do see bumps in ticket sales after an article has appeared. That certainly works very well for us.
And that's my point. And your point was getting the story out and those articles it's not such a limited space. It allows you to give more of the background, the reason they need to see this show, why it's relevant.
And that's what, for example, we should be doing a story now, which we haven't done to my knowledge. I know I haven't done it, and probably need to, is the cast has just been announced for Becky's new car. And that's an opportunity to say, here's what this story is about, while we're saying, here's the cast, here's what the story is about, here's why it's relevant to you, come see it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they sent us a questionnaire, basically, beforehand to advertise the show, to get all the information that they need for their article. For a lot of times, we basically write the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and one thing with the paper, we have to remember, their goal is different than ours in some ways. They're trying to sell papers. So that's where I think the human interest comes in more, because we know human interest sells newspapers. But I don't think it necessarily translates to selling of play. So they may do a show saying, hey, come see it, Bob Yeoman, he's overcome this, this, and this in his life, which is interesting to the newspaper watchers. But I don't think people who want to see the play are going to say, well, Bob's a great guy, so I'm going to go see the show because Bob Yeoman's in it.
Oh!
Some people may.
I know. I got to pay them off again.
So, I think marketing is difficult for most of us to begin with, and we've certainly talked about it in other times on this podcast. But I think it's also especially difficult because I still think that we as community theater have got, and I've talked a lot this show, but I think we as community theater still have that hurdle to overcome, is that we are community theater. I feel we should all say we're community theater with pride, but I think we're getting a big pushback from society that somehow community theater is second-class theater, if not third. And, you know, calling ourselves regional theater isn't necessarily going to change that.
We're still the geeks.
I think we're community theater.
I think that's, I agree with you on that to a certain extent, but I think there was a time when community theater was scoffed more than it is now. I think our problem now goes way beyond that, and we've said it over and over. I just don't think people want to be involved with organizations like they used to. I think that's a bigger hurdle than we're community theater. Nobody takes us seriously. I just honestly don't think anybody wants to be, everybody wants to be online. Everybody wants to be at home and part of something where they can lay in their pajamas and curl up on the couch. I think that's more to the issue at this point than community theater being, you know, well, that's just community theater.
And do you think some of it is also community theater doesn't have the what's in it for me? Because I sometimes look at things and I see everybody needs, you know, monetization is the big word. Late stage capitalism, we all got to monetize everything. Well, nobody's getting rich in community theater.
No.
And if they are, they aren't community theater.
They're all different too.
So I wonder if that's part of it too.
It could be.
It's how to capitalize on the enriching experience of it. Yeah.
It's lots to think about, but looking at the time, and I know I have a review to do.
Yay!
Right.
So, at this point, we're not planning on a part three of this, but you can, if you like that kind of stuff, stay tuned, because I'm sure it will come up again and again and again and again. And we certainly welcome all you out there to help participate in this discussion. And that's, you know, we're about trying to find solutions, not so much about identifying problems, but it seems we spend a lot of time identifying problems. I think, are you falling asleep there, Carol? What's
no.
What's happened?
I know. I got a little worried.
She's bowing to her iPhone.
She's smelling her.
Does he even smell like
just let's move on. This got weird. Let's just move on.
What are we smelling?
Don't ask. Let's just.
She's making sure it's real leather.
Oh.
Fine, Corinthian.
I shouldn't have called Carol out. Now she won't want to come back. So the other night, we had a huge snowstorm, and I, of course, decided to do the only logical thing to do when the storm of the century is coming through, is get out and see some theater. So I went down to Oregon. Jeez, I just talked about Oregon. I went down to Bowling Green, Ohio, which isn't as far as it sounds like, folks, for me, but to see the Black Swamp Players present a show called The Moors, M-O-O-R-S, as in the marshy...
Scottish moors.
That whole area of the United Kingdom. It was written by Jen Silverman, who, from what I could see from what they have posted about the playwright, she's a new young voice in the playwriting world. And it was directed by Fran Martone, who is a very experienced director down there. And it actually had some original music to go along with it as well, by Daniel Kluger, with lyrics by the playwright, and original music composed and arranged by Juan Rodriguez. So anyway, I got to tell you, this show is very, very doable by any community theater. The set was very simple. It basically consisted of a settee, like a love seat, a chair, a door, some curtains to kind of give you the impression of an old Gothic mansion, and that was all they had. There was a trick with the rug, which at one point gets turned over to reveal that it's gone from a clean rug to a blood-stained rug. I don't want to give too much of the play away why that may be, but this was a fun show to watch. And an interesting show, too. Like a lot of what I would call new theater, new plays, it got a little weird. And we'll post pictures of the set and the program on our Facebook page. But the interesting thing about it was started as a parody of those Gothic romance novels. Your Bronte sisters, Jane Austen, and things like that. And you had the stern mistress of the household, and you had the flighty sister, and you had a couple what turned out to be a couple maids, but it was played by the same actress, and you knew something wasn't right when you walked in there. One of our friends, Dylan Sickles, who has performed at the Merrill Community Players as Gilligan, I think, last, or as he was also Ariel, one of the Ariels in our version of The Tempest, did a wonderful job playing a mastiff, a dog.
Oh.
They put him in this huge fur coat. And one of the plot points is this mastiff falls in love with a hen, a chicken, basically it's a moor hen, and I don't think I'm giving too much away to say that relationship ends as you might suspect it would, but it's you hear about their love affair, the love affair that's going on between them, while you have the stuff that's going on with the humans in the house. Brandy Colbert, who both Kathleen and I played with in a show at the Toledo Repertory Theater, was also in as a stern headmistress, and of course she was wonderful. In fact, I got to say the entire cast just did a superb job. They were very solid in their approach, and you believed each and every one of them, and that was just a joy to watch them perform. If you go down to Bowling Green to see this show, it's a small converted church, but it's a wonderful space. It seats maybe 50, 54 people, I think, by my count. Has good lighting, good good sight lines and everything. So, but the story of the Moors, like I say, it starts out as a parody, but it gets a little more existential as it goes along because it is dealing with some weird things that go on. For example, every time they come into the room, they say they're in another room, but it's always the same room. And so that's one of the running gags. When the new governess shows up, it's like, "Well, welcome to the parlor. How do you, now let's go let me show you to your chamber for the night. Here you are. Well, isn't this the parlor? This looks exactly the same as the parlor. No, this is your bedchamber. Hope you like it." And then later on becomes the great hall and all this. So like I say, it kind of gets a little freaky out there. And it has its various mysteries. I won't give a lot of way of the plot, but it's very doable by any community theater group. So I would recommend that they have a chance to take a look at The Moors by Jen Silverman. It is just, I thought it was a fun show and kind of theater. When I sat there, I left like, this is why I like theater. It's in fact, I think we should look at it as well. It's the kind of thing where it's like, this is...
Has anybody ordered the script yet?
No, I just saw it.
Question.
Yeah, I just saw it 2 days ago, so...
Because of the time period and what you just described Dylan doing, is the costuming complicated?
It is period costuming, mm-hmm. And in fact, one of the things I would suggest to them is they actually... It took me a while to catch on that they were changing costumes. So the sister, for example, first time she appeared in a different dress, it's like, oh, is that a different dress? And then they did it. Then I paid attention. It's like if the next scene she's a different dress. Now, if I was wrong about that, folks down in Black Swamp, let me know. But I could see that some of them were changing costumes. I would say that was unnecessary. Okay. I really didn't need to have a need for them to change costume because they were in this period piece already. You know, there was no need to keep switching it up because all we're seeing is the big skirts and everything. Mm-hmm. So I didn't, you know, other than taking on a coat or putting on a scarf or something. But to me, I think the one was, they were beautiful costumes, but I just didn't see a need for them to keep changing costumes. There was, even though it takes place over several days, who pays attention to that? Now, that may be partly because I, as a director, don't think the audience pays attention to that either, but in the audience, I really wasn't paying attention. She went from a dark blue outfit to a dark green outfit. It, you know, to me, that didn't change anything.
So another question is there seating that you said it had real good sight lines? And because, you know, it was a converted church.
Well, I'll say good sight lines. They did have a raised stage.
Okay.
And then flat seating. It was good sight lines until the tall gentleman sat in front of me. and so that's the problem, because their stage is maybe a couple feet up. And it's the same issue that we and players are dealing mm-hmm. with is, do you raise the audience? Do you raise the stage? They chose to raise the stage. But there were issues of seeing anybody below the waist.
All right. And so my last question, just to go full circle with our topic, because this is an unknown play, what drew you to go see this?
Well, in this case, Kathleen, you were correct. Mm-hmm. To a degree, it was who was in it, because I happen to know a couple people. However, I was intrigued by the premise, and I think I would have gone to see it anyway because it was also a new group that I hadn't seen before.
Kathleen looks
she's
like
patting, the, she's heard Kathleen bending over, like the, yeah. patting herself on the shoulder.
She's like the prosecutor who just walked away from the witness, going, "Yeah, I scored
you
that."
You can't handle the truth.
Turns to the jury. Ha ha!
One for me.
However, given the weather conditions, I would say, unfortunately, that's all who were in the audience were people that knew the cast.
I
do hope they get more than just the friends.
How many weekends is it running?
Two weekends,
okay.
So I don't know if this episode will drop by the time their second weekend.
It should drop by Monday.
Yeah, you won't have time to go see it, unfortunately.
Sounds like you should have the soundtrack from Dark Shadows.
Well, the music they used in the background was very appropriate and had that. And they did a nice job. They had the mist, at one point come in and things like that. So I thought I thought it was just a very well-done production all in all. Mm-hmm. I would have seen it even if Dylan and Brandy weren't in it.
It goes to show I didn't even.
She did not make up that, Kathleen, but I was playing devil's advocate earlier. however, they got one person because of that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did they get 54? No.
Yeah.
But if it's two weekends.
Yeah.
Well, and again, but I'm just saying is, they did not, you know, to prove my point, they did not sell out their house.
No.
But it's the kind of thing that it was not for lack of trying. They did I thought they did a very good job.
They did everything right.
And and from our perspective, it was something that just really, it's the kind of show I think we could do. I think any group could do this without any problem whatsoever. It will not be everybody's cup of tea.
Mm-hmm. Good, I'm coffee.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, thank you, Dave. That
You're
was
welcome.
Very interesting.
So I hope I lived up to the reputation of Kathleen
reviews.
And Brian about doing reviews and Carol.
Better than Brian.
But like I say, so it was a fun night, and I did not go into the ditch on the way home.
That's
so,
a plus.
So that even made it better.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if I'm paying attention to the clock right, we're just about run out of time for this episode as well. But so as usual, those of you who make it this far, I'd like to thank each and every one of you. We all would for what you do, for listening to us, and for the support you give not only to us, but for keeping theater alive in your communities. We appreciate feedback and conversation, as we say several times in a given episode. So be sure to visit our Facebook page for more fun. Look for Monroe Community or MCP Podcast or Monroe Community Players Podcast, or look for the Art and Business Community Theater. In fact, if you Google it, we are the first thing that comes up. We have hit number one in Google. for our podcast. So we're very easy to find on almost any podcast platform. Thank you very much, everybody out there. Don't feel free to give us a rating and stuff. You know, so far we got that perfect five, and we want to keep it going. But I'd like to see more than like to see more people giving us that. Emails can be sent to mcppodcast, all one word, at monroecommunityplayers.org. And keep up with the latest shows and activities of the community. Community Players, go to monroecommunityplayers.org. We generally release 2 episodes a month, so please take a moment to subscribe, like, otherwise rate us, and help us spread the word that we are here. You are the most important reason that other people are listening, and we do appreciate that. The art and business of community theater is presented by Monroe Community Players. All opinions expressed are those of ourselves and not necessarily Monroe Community Players, its affiliates, blah, blah, blah.
Just in case.
Maybe the blah, blah, blah.
And it's recorded at the Monroe Public Access Podcast Studio, currently high atop the Benish Building in historic Monroe, Michigan.
Just currently, yes.
Just currently. It will be moving shortly.
Yes, it will.
So once again, oh, and question. I know you all want a question,
what's
don't
the question?
You? Gee, I don't know. I didn't have one written down. So I think the question is going to be one that I believe we have asked before, but let's ask again. What's your favorite marketing technique to tell the story of community theater as opposed to just to promote the show? So once again, for the love of theater, we are the Groupies, and we will see you in the green room.
In the green room.
In the green room.
All right.
Good way to come in there right on cue, guys.
Well, goodbye. And don't think it hasn't been a little slice of heaven.